When learning Chinese, it's hard to make sure you're doing the right things. Whole Nation's four strands allow you to analyze and balance your learning. Hello and welcome to the Hacking Chinese podcast. In this week's episode, we are going to talk about how to analyze and balance your Chinese learning using Whole Nation's four strands. This is a model that I've mentioned before on the podcast. For example, in episode 42, when we talked about language logging, I used the four strands as one of the ways of categorizing your learning activities. Those of you who have enrolled in my beginner course, Unlocking Chinese, also know about the four strands because that's what we use in the last section to structure and plan your learning. This is a model that I've been using for many years, both for my own learning and when I plan courses, and also when I coach and help students plan their learning. So I thought it would be a good idea to go through this properly in a separate episode, rather than having it scattered in many places. Most of what I'm going to say today comes from Whole Nation's article published in 2007 called The Four Strands, published in the International Journal of Innovation in Language Learning and Teaching. For those of you who want a deeper look at the research behind this model, I suggest you check out his paper, but in this episode I want to focus on what the four strands are and what they mean for you as a learner of Chinese. Of course, you can also listen to this as a teacher of Chinese to balance the courses that you teach, but I will address students as usual. I would also like to say that the goal here is not to summarize what Nation said in his article, it is to highlight the things that I think are important and tell you what that means for you as a learner. So this will be a mix of explaining what the four strands are and my own commentary and analysis and reflections regarding these four strands and how to use them for learning Chinese specifically. This is important to keep in mind because Nation's article was not targeting Chinese learners, it wasn't targeting language learners at all, in fact, but instead language teachers and people who plan language courses and curricula. However, I think it can be argued that some of the points that Nation make are actually easier to implement on an individual level, so if you're listening to this, it's likely that you're an independent student who really care about learning Chinese, and then that's good news because some of the things that Nation proposed that would be rather hard to implement in a classroom for various reasons are actually rather reasonable to implement on an individual level for yourself in your own learning. For example, an important concept here is familiarity, i.e. how familiar you are with the language and the content that you read and listen to. And that is rather hard to pinpoint in a classroom with 30 students because everybody knows a different amount of Chinese and they will understand a different amount when they listen and they read. But if you're just one person, it is significantly easier to approximate how much of something you already know, for example. I put some thought into how to explain the four strands in an approachable way, and I think the best way is to start with an overview. So let's just go through the four strands quickly and see what they are. I will then talk a little bit what this means for you as a learner and some things you might not have noticed immediately just by explaining what the four strands are. And then after that, I will go through each strand and talk about how you know if something actually belongs to that strand, what that strand is for, and what the purpose is, and so on. So the first strand is meaning-focused input, and this means listening and reading to language you're mostly familiar with a focus on understanding the content as opposed to learning new words and grammar or practicing some aspect of the language. The second strand is meaning-focused output, so the same thing but output, so we're talking about speaking and writing, and again using language you're largely familiar with. So not because you are supposed to practice a grammar pattern or use words you learned in the previous chapter or something like that, you are supposed to know most of this already. The third strand is language-focused learning, and this is explicitly learning about the language, such as characters, vocabulary, about pronunciation, grammar, and so on. It also contains listening, speaking, reading, and writing when you're not familiar with most of the content. So if you're reading a very hard text, maybe in your textbook, or if you're trying to listen to something that's really hard, this counts as language-focused learning. The fourth strand is fluency development, and this is similar to the first two strands in that it is meaning-focused, so it's about communicating, it is not about practicing some language form or something, it's about communicating, but this time you're supposed to know basically everything. This is a way of getting better at things you already know. Now that you have some idea of what these four strands are, I will go through some points that I think are important in general for most of the strands or for some of the strands in order to put them in context and understand what they would imply for your learning. And then after that, we will discuss each strand in particular. So the first point I want to bring up is that, according to Nation, these strands should be equally weighted. So that means that you should do 25% of each. While he gives some reasons for this statement, he also admits that it is largely arbitrary, i.e. there's nothing that says that there has to be 25% on each strand, and it could in fact be some other distribution. And this could also depend on your level, your situation, and so on. I personally don't agree with this distribution. I think that input is considerably more important than nation thinks here, but that doesn't stop me from thinking that this model is very good and a useful way of analyzing language learning activities. The next point I want to bring up is that three of the four strands focus on familiar language, and familiar here means that most of the language you encounter will be known to you, and nation gives a specific number, he says ideally 95% or more. If you look in a normal textbook and you assume that you follow the textbook from start to finish, you will find that most chapters include much less than 95% known language. If you think about it, that means that if you have 20 words in a sentence, you are supposed to only have one unknown word, whereas in most textbooks, each sentence has several unknown words and there might be new grammar patterns and so on and so forth. In practice, this means that almost everything that's done in a traditional Chinese learning classroom is considered to be language-focused learning. This, of course, has some serious consequences, and this is also something we can see in most formal education systems, i.e. that people are very good at describing grammar or answering grammar questions, or maybe know much about the language, or they know many words and characters, but they are actually rather bad at communicating and using the language for things they didn't specifically practice in class. If you go through such a course, you will one day wonder why your Chinese isn't as good as it ought to be, which is the title of episode 64 of the podcast, so if that sounds familiar and you want to check it out, I've put a link in the description. The next general point I want to bring up is that nation doesn't only count time in class, of course, he's talking about your learning in general, so that includes all the time you spend learning Chinese, not just the time in class. And this means, of course, that in a classroom there might be reasons to not do something in the classroom that can equally well be done somewhere else. For example, you cannot do all the reading and all the listening you're required to do in class because then you wouldn't have time for anything else and progress would be very slow. This focus on studying the right thing at the right time was something we talked about in episode 86. Another important point I want to make is that meaning-focused input takes a lot of time before it has any effect. So meaning-focused input, that's when you're reading and listening to things that are 95% known to you or more. So there will be new words, there will be some new grammar, but for you to have a chance to learn these, you need to read and you need to listen a lot. You cannot expect to read something once and encounter a word once and then just learn it. That's not how it works. But if you spend a lot of time reading and listening, these words will pop up all the time in different context, and you will be able to learn them. Finally, it's likely that if you're enrolled in a formal course, or if you're studying on your own in a way that it's similar to taking a course, that your approach will differ quite a lot from what I'm going to tell you about today and what Nation proposes in his paper. And that is okay. I'm not trying to convince you to quit doing everything you're doing now and build a new method from scratch. Instead, I think you should identify some things that might be beneficial for you. Maybe you realize that you spend more than 50% of your time with language-focused learning and much less than 25% on meaning-focused input. So what you can do then is look at your language-focused learning and see if you can convert any of those activities into meaning-focused input. Meaning-focused input, such as listening and reading, is usually rather easy to fit into your daily schedule and so on, so it shouldn't be too hard to listen a little bit more. So, of course, I want you to upgrade the way you learn Chinese, that is the purpose of Hacking Chinese and this podcast, but don't feel that you have to do everything at once. Making small upgrades and taking one step at a time is perfectly fine. Now that I've gone through some general points regarding the four strands, let's look at each strand in more detail. Here are five questions you can ask yourself to see if an activity counts in the first strand, so that's meaning-focused input. 1. Is most of what you hear or see already familiar to you? 2. Are you interested in what the text or audio says? 3. Is the new language you encounter restricted to a few percent of the total? 4. Can you figure out the meaning of unknown language by context? 5. Are you listening and reading a lot? So if we were to be strict about this, you have to answer yes to all of these questions before something counts as meaning-focused input. Like I said before, this disqualifies most of the major textbooks available on the market, but it doesn't disqualify things like graded readers and the like. This is the territory of extensive reading and listening, and this is something we have covered on the podcast, namely in episode 16. The point here is that if you want to learn a language and be proficient at using it, you need to have seen and heard the language used in many different contexts. It's not enough to see a word in one or two sentences, you need to see it in many, many different sentences over and over, and then you will build up a feel for how it's used, and then gradually you can also use it yourself. The problem is that most students and teachers do the opposite. They focus a lot of time on just a few texts that are usually rather short because they are very difficult. And if you only focus on difficult texts, well, of course you can't cover a lot of text because each is very difficult and takes a lot of time to finish. So the general advice here is to read as much as possible and read things that you can make sense of without looking up words all the time. And this is rather difficult as a beginner especially, and this is why I will return to this topic in next week's episode. The second strand is meaning-focused output, and here is how you can tell if your activity falls into this category. 1. Do you talk or write about things you're mostly familiar with? 2. Is your goal to convey meaning to someone, i.e. communicate? 3. Do you already know most of the Chinese you need to accomplish this? 4. Can you use communicative strategies to reach your goal? And 5. Are you speaking and writing a lot? Again, you need to answer yes to all of these questions if we are to talk about meaning-focused output. If your speaking and writing requires you to look up things all the time or you need to use things you don't already know, then this counts as language-focused learning and not meaning-focused output. I think this strand is not too hard to understand, especially since we just talked about meaning-focused input, but there is one word I want to dwell a little bit on here, and that is communication. And you might think, okay, wow, languages are for communication, so anything I do in the language is communication. This is not how the word is used here, and communication means something more specific. To put it very briefly, communication is when you try to convey meaning to somebody else, or if you're trying to understand the meaning somebody else tries to convey to you, of course. So, for example, let's say that I tell you in Chinese that my birthday is February 27th. If you didn't know that, that counts as communication. You needed to understand what I was saying, and it was new information for you. Of course, it also counts as communication on my end, because I needed to say these things to you in Chinese. Compare this with if you're reading a dialogue in your textbook where somebody asks Da Wei where he's from and he says Mei Guo. That's not communication at all. You're just reading something off a page. You knew that Da Wei was from Mei Guo before your friend said it because that's what it says in the textbook. No information was conveyed, and actually you didn't even need to understand the question in order to answer it because the answer was already written in the textbook. Let's compare again with some kind of activity where you ask your classmate what their favorite color is, even though you already know what their favorite color is. This again does not count as communication. So in essence, there needs to be an information gap between the two people doing the communication. This doesn't need to be something that happens in real time, so if somebody writes something and you then later try to understand it, that can of course still be communication. Another important thing to highlight here is communicative strategies. So strategies here don't refer to study techniques like how do you learn characters the best way possible or how do you improve your pronunciation, things that I usually like to talk about. It refers to things you can do when communicating to improve the communication or make it more successful or fluent or something. A simple example might be if you're in a conversation, don't understand what somebody says, you can just ask them, what did you say? What does that mean? These are all strategies, or you can ask them to speak more slowly or something like that. You can also realize that what you just said didn't make sense, so you just rephrase it, or you try to use gestures, or you try to find some other way of getting your meaning across. All these things are strategies, and these are built through practice, and this is part of the reason why Nation advocates doing meaning-focused output. Of course, meaning-focused output and input are usually combined. It's quite rare that we just say things without anybody listening, for example, or someone listening without responding at all, but rather we usually engage in conversations, and that of course contains both input and output at the same time. The third strand is language-focused learning, and this is something I don't want to talk about that much because most of the things that you're familiar with from studying languages in school falls into this category, and most of you already know what these things are. And the general problem is that people spend way too much time doing these things, and since my goal here is to help you balance and improve the way you learn Chinese, you should usually do less of these things, and so you should focus on the other three strands. Very rarely do I encounter students who should do more language-focused learning. Still, I'm not of the opinion that language-focused learning is meaningless. I think it certainly has a role to play, and if you're interested in reading more about that, I wrote an article called Learn Chinese Implicitly Through Exposure with a Seasoning of Explicit Instruction. And of course, I've put a link in the description. That brings us to the fourth and final strand, which is fluency development. And here again are some questions for you. 1. Is everything, or almost everything, you hear, say, read, or write already known to you? 2. Are you trying to receive or convey meaning? 3. Is there pressure or encouragement to do so faster than you normally do? 4. Are you doing a lot of listening, speaking, reading, and writing? So, as you can see here, fluency development is not limited to just output, speaking and writing, but also to input, listening and reading. The main difference between the first two strands and this one is that here it's not just 95% that's supposed to be known to you, but almost everything, meaning maybe there can be an occasional word here and there you don't know or have forgotten, but you should be able to do these things without looking anything up at all. This is about getting better at things you already know, and you should not learn new things here. This type of practice is rather hard to get as a beginner, but you can get it if you revisit old material or you do slight variations of things you already know. But unless you have someone who specifically helps you out to tailor material for you and so on, this will be difficult for beginners. Some of you might also have reacted to question 3, which was about pressure or encouragement to do something faster. This is one of the very few aspects of Nation's model that I don't agree with. While I do think that putting the emphasis on speed is sometimes very good, for example, if you are trying to improve your reading speed, then simply trying to read faster can be very beneficial. But I don't think that this should be a prerequisite for something to count as fluency development. For example, if you're listening to a conversation or a podcast, or if you're reading a text your teacher wrote that only contains words that you already know and language you've studied and should be familiar with, this surely counts as fluency development, even if you don't increase the speed of the audio. Now, I do understand where Nation is coming from here, and I do use similar techniques when I teach normally too, but I just don't think it should be a requirement. For example, one activity that does include some kind of encouragement or pressure to perform faster is a kind of conversation practice where you get less and less time to say roughly the same things. So, for example, a pair of students get 10 questions to answer in, say, 12 minutes. And these are questions about their opinions about different things or their experience or something like that. Then, after the time is up, you mix up the pairs, so you are now paired with a new student, so you know your answers to the same questions, but obviously you don't know what your new partner's answers to these questions are, and they don't know what you answered to these questions before either. So therefore, you need to talk, you need to speak Chinese to exchange ideas and answer these questions. But this time, you only get 9 minutes. Then, when the time is up, you do the same thing again with a third partner, and now you only get 6 minutes. The point is, of course, that by talking about the same things and having the same type of conversation over and over, even if the specifics and the content is slightly different every time, makes you much faster. It improves your fluency, and hence its fluency development. A good example of this that I think most of us are familiar with is, why are you learning Chinese? So this question is something that you get asked all the time by Chinese people, and you've probably answered this question many times. If you studied Chinese for many years, you might have answered this question dozens or even hundreds of times. And I'm sure you feel rather fluent when you talk about that specific question, as compared to any other why question you might reasonably get asked. So yes, trying to go faster can be very useful, but I also think there are other ways of doing fluency development, and the most important thing here, in my opinion, is that this should be about language that you already know. It should not be about learning new things. So I think it's time to wrap up my explanation and discussion of Polynesian's four strands. And the goal here was to give you a tool that you can use to analyze your own learning and make sure you have a balanced approach. Like I said in the introduction, I've used this model many times myself, and it's one of the best, I think. It's the one that I can use over and over without feeling that there's something seriously wrong with it, and I hope you'll find it useful too. Thank you for tuning in to the Hacking Chinese podcast. If you like this episode, please share it. More information and inspiration about learning and teaching Chinese can be found at hackingchinese.com. See you in the next episode, and until then, good luck with your studies.